Welcome to Stand in the Gap Today with Sam Rohr, Gary Dahl, and David Kistler of the American Pastors Network, addressing the most critical issues impacting our culture from a biblical and constitutional perspective. Learn more about the work of the American Pastors Network at AmericanPastorsNetwork.net.
Just a couple of days ago on this program, we discussed how Barack Obama is directing protests across the country from his, as we're terming it, his D.C. bunker through the framework of Organizing for Action. It's a Soros-funded and left-funded successor organization to ACORN, as we all remember, was exposed and then collapsed. Their plan for disrupting the town meetings of Republican members of Congress appears to be right on cue if you've been following other news. So where's this headed? We're going to talk about this dangerous strategy in just a minute. But we're also going to invite into today's program David New, our constitutional attorney and our expert on legal matters, to discuss two other key issues that the opponents of the Trump administration at least are bringing up as issues. One of them is, and we'll answer and deal with this question, what if a president refuses to obey a court order? That's number one. We're going to talk about that. Secondly, can the 25th Amendment be used by the opponents of President Trump who are trying to level the charge that he is somehow mentally deficient or mentally ill? That's right. You heard right. There are those in the last 5 days that are trying to raise that negative. And I'm going to play a clip in the third segment that's going to speak to that issue. You'll be shocked about how and why people are bringing this up as an issue. And then we're going to conclude the program today by looking at the Trump administration and what some observers are saying, that it may just be the most open door Oval Office in the nation's history. That's something very, very interesting. And with that, I welcome you to Stand in the Gap today. This is Sam Rohr, and it'll be Gary Dahl and I again today. David Kistler is still away from us. And then, of course, our special guest, our regular returning guest, constitutional attorney David New. Well, Matt, in the first segment, I want to highlight just to get a comment from you, Gary, on one issue, and then I want to go to Dave and get a comment from him on another issue. But Gary, on this first one here, I think it was on Monday, and actually on Friday of last week, we actually brought up this issue about Barack Obama directing actions of over 32,000 organized and trained activists. He's actually training another 25,000 under this group Organizing for Action. He's training them next month in March. And their goal is to sabotage the Trump administration. They said they were going to disrupt Republican town hall meetings when they went home, trying to bring down the president's intent to change any issue relative to border security, immigration, and Obamacare. It appears that they are doing that. Gary, I don't know if you've had a chance to look at some of the news and what you're seeing, but I'd like to get your comment on what you think this kind of organized protest is intended to do and what it's what the challenge is it presents for congressmen generally of trying to communicate with their people as they should do when they go back home.
Well, you know, Sam, I think this is pretty serious from my perspective. And first of all, I asked the question, do these people have a constitutional right to protest? Well, they do under the First Amendment. You know, the First Amendment says that people have the right to peaceably assemble and even to petition the government for redress of grievances. But number one, we need to ask the question, are they peaceably assembling? I'm not so sure. In reality, what they are doing is disrupting proper governance, in my opinion. They are keeping these representatives and senators, perhaps in some cases, from really being able to properly communicate to the constituency exactly what needs to be communicated. As far as trying to sabotage President Trump's administration, I think this is very, very dangerous. It's not really the way to do things in a democratic republic. I think that what they are doing, some of these people, is really attacking the office of the presidency, not necessarily Donald Trump, but the office of the presidency of the United States according to the Constitution. And if they continue to do this, I think it's, as I've often said, I'm afraid it's going to lead to a civil war that may really just and I hope this doesn't happen, but may just set aside the practices of the United States Constitution, and consequently our nation of laws is going to go down the tube. I am greatly concerned about both of these issues because neither one of them is good for a climate of governance. I'm very concerned about it, Sam.
Now, Gary, I am too. And it, just because it's not the reflection of individual citizens standing up and asking a legitimate question.
Right.
These are organized efforts to disrupt, very carefully laid out in their training manual, which has been available to people.
And so by the way, some of these people are paid to do this. And, you know, it's interesting, as we talked about the what Obama is doing with his organization last week, I've seen this several times on national news, so maybe we got something started. I don't know.
Well, we did, Gary. I think that's correct. I'm going to switch gears here now. Go to David New. David, another big issue happened yesterday, and this is more of a legal thing, and I want to get your input. But Sean Spicer, on behalf of President Trump administration yesterday, announced that the president, by order, was overturning Barack Obama's egregious order to public schools, which we all remember last year, where he told public schools that they needed to alter their policies to allow boys to enter girls' bathrooms and locker rooms if they felt they wanted to be a girl. Dave, this is a whole transgender issue, but how do you interpret what happened yesterday? And in your opinion, how is this going to affect the entire discussion relative to this transgender agenda?
Well, I want to say that I'm very pleased that President Trump did what he did. I think it is absolute ultimate in stupidity that the liberal left, the extreme left in this country, do not know physically who is qualified to use a urinal. It is just unbelievable. By the way, I want to make a prediction.
That's a good point, brother.
That's pretty simple.
I want to make a prediction right now. This business that Barack Obama is doing, this is the opening salvo for his election to be the next president of the United States.
Barack Obama?
That's interesting, Dave. Why do you think that? Because I have not heard anybody proffer that kind of a suggestion. Why are you saying that?
No, nobody has, and I want to go on record right now making a prediction that he will run for, I guess it is technically re-election. He is constitutionally permitted to do that because he is not, will not have served two consecutive terms. He will be another President Garfield, so or the other one, Chester Arthur, I believe. But the point being is, in my mind, when I look at what he's doing and some of the brief statements he's made already, he is now running for the next re-election right now. He wants to run in 2020.
That's interesting, David, because he has said very clearly he wasn't going to leave. And I mean, do you know, we've said there's no precedent for a previous president ever to stay in Washington, D.C. as he is. So that probably would go to somewhat to supporting your statement.
Yeah, no, I think this is the opening salvo. And this, again, shows you how crazy and screwy liberals are. These people, if you want to hold massive rallies and demonstrations, you want to do it before the election day, not after.
Well, that's what Mitch McConnell said in Texas. He said, come on, guys, get over it. You lost. Let's get on with it. I thought that was interesting from McConnell to say that. Ladies and gentlemen, when you come back, we're going to continue and go more in depth here with on this issue is if a president refuses to obey a court order, what happens? Now, not to say that has occurred, but we're going to talk to David New about that because some of the opponents of the president are trying to raise this as an issue.
Christian parents want their children to excel in spiritual growth and educational achievement. Both are essential for future success in an increasingly complex world full of moral and economic challenges. BJU Press Materials place great value on the knowledge of God in His works. They teach critical thinking skills your child will need to get along both now and in the future. BJU Press Materials are available for grades K-12. From the earliest grades, they teach biblical Christianity as a system of God-revealed truths. BJU Press Materials are well written, grade level appropriate, and biblically integrated. Teachers' editions assure that instructors have the plans and extra tools to keep your child engaged and excited about learning by teaching your child how to analyze, evaluate, and ultimately create new solutions. And that's just what today's workplace is looking for. If you're a Christian school teacher or administrator, a homeschool teacher, or a parent who just wants your child to learn more, start by exploring the BJU Press website. Visit bjupress.com. That's bjupress.com.
Americans are a freedom-loving people. Wouldn't it be great if you could carry a copy of the essential documents that outline our freedoms written by our nation's founders in your pocket so you can refer to it every day? Well, now you can. Stand in the Gap Radio has found something you're sure to like, the Patriot's Essential Liberty Pocket Guide. The handy guide is a slim 6.5 by 3.5 inches, yet it includes the Declaration of Independence, the U.S. Constitution, the preamble to the Bill of Rights, and other influential documents, including, in the words of our founders, topical quotes from America's founders, plus a listing of online resources for further research by the serious-minded or the just plain curious. To see and request your copy of the Patriot's Essential Liberty Pocket Guide and make your tax-deductible gift of any amount, go to AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. That's AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. Let us hear from you today. Thank you, and God bless you.
We, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, do ordain and establish this Constitution for the United States of America. Tune in from 7 to 8 a.m. every Friday morning to hear Gary Porter, Executive Director of the Constitutional Leadership Initiative, Phil Duffy, Constitutional Law Instructor at Widener University, Pastor David Whitney, Senior Instructor at the Institute on the Constitution, and their guests every Friday morning from 7 to 8 a.m. as they explore and help us understand the Constitution, not only as our foundational document, but also as it relates to our lives today. Right here on 1180 WFYL, working for your liberty.
History was made on today's date. Stay tuned for an American Minute with Bill Federer.
The Panama Canal Zone was acquired for $10 million by the United States on this day, February 23, 1904. In his address to Congress, President William Taft referred to it, saying, "Our defense of the Panama Canal, together with our enormous world trade and our missionary outposts on the frontiers of civilization, require us to recognize our position as one of the foremost in the family of nations." President Taft continued, "We must clothe ourselves with sufficient naval power to give weight to our influence in those directions of progress that a powerful Christian nation should advocate."
This has been an American Minute with Bill Federer. For a free transcript, call American Minute at 1-888-USA-WORD.
You're listening to Stand in the Gap Today, the daily radio program of the American Pastors Network. For more information, visit the APN website, AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. And now, let's rejoin Stand in the Gap Today.
In this section, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to talk about what if a president refuses to obey a court order. And I'm going to have Dave go into that here in just a moment. But before we do so, David, I'm going to ask you to explain just a little bit more, because you made a prognostication in that last segment that really I haven't heard anybody say, and that is the fact that you think that Barack Obama is actually already in the midst of setting himself up to take down this administration with intent that he runs again in 2020. Now, the question is, define that a little bit relative to, if that in fact is true, why do you say it is, in light of particularly the 22nd Amendment that says no person shall be elected to the office of the president more than twice?
Yes. Well, by the way, I want to correct myself. It's Grover Cleveland who was the 22nd and 24th president, and obviously could not have been President Garfield for obvious reasons.
Yes.
During the campaign, if you recall, President Obama said if he was running now, he would have been reelected for a third term.
Right.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
He said that, and that's in his mindset. And there's just no question that this man believes that this President Trump is ruining the country from his point of view. I think President Trump is doing a great job myself. But this man believes he should be president, and he is not barred by the 22nd Amendment from doing that. It's consecutive office, so he can run again. And I think that's exactly what's happening. This is the opening salvo. I don't think he plans on removing President Trump. I am sad to say, and it's very frightening to say this, but the Constitution does allow for a president, for the United States to have a president and a vice president who has never received a single vote by anybody. The Constitution allows that, and that's the 25th Amendment. The United States has already had a president and a vice president who right. wasn't voted by anyone. And, of course, we're talking about, now I'll get the name right.
Gerald Ford.
President Ford, and, of course, Nelson Rockefeller,
right,
who was vice president. So it allows for it. I don't think that's in President Obama's bag of marbles, bag of tricks to do. That's for other people. But his game plan is to basically set himself up for another run at the White House. That's what he's doing.
I still have a hard time seeing that, David, in the 22nd Amendment. It says, no person shall be elected to the office of the president more than twice, and no person who has held the office of president or acted as president for more than 2 years of a term to which some other person was elected president shall be elected to the office of the president more than once. You say he still has that opportunity to run again based upon that statement.
Yeah, look what it says, more than twice. Is he doing that if he runs in 2020? No, he's not.
But he ran twice already in...
Right. That's the whole point. No person shall be elected to the office of president more than twice.
But would that mean two separate elections, or are you talking about...
Consecutively. You're talking consecutively, David. That's why you're saying it means consecutively.
Exactly.
That's what that means. Yeah. And that is the way it is in a lot of the states where there's governors and term limits as well. It doesn't say that in the language, but you're saying that because of the interpretation of it, that it means consecutively, and there's probably, and is there precedent to back that up? Has anybody ever done that before, precedent-wise?
I don't.
So no. It would be a first
but
time.
The operative word is twice, and what it means is it doesn't mean no more than twice. It does, and that's what people who say he cannot run are saying. It means he cannot be president more than two times. That's not what it says. It says he can't be elected more than twice.
Well, you're the authority. I mean, I'm not an authority. I'm just questioning it, not questioning you, David.
Sure, no.
But you know, if indeed this is the case, it. To me, Dave and Sam, it raises very serious questions beyond what we've even thought about up to this point.
Well, it could, Gary, and I think we need to keep our eyes open for what is happening. But we've raised it, ladies and gentlemen. We've raised the issue. We'll mark this day here, February 23rd. David New said it's a possibility. We're going to note that.
You did it, David.
We're going to note it, so it's official as of today. All right. But it ties into that. Let me go back now, Dave, to the section we're going to talk about the matter of a court order. Is there ever been a circumstance where a president has ever refused to obey a court order, or is this whole issue that this president, as some are trying to say, is acting too independent, that kind of thing, and raising this, is that just a red herring? Tell us a little bit about this issue. Is it even an issue?
Yes, presidents have disobeyed court. Well, first of all, let's make sure that the Constitution says that the courts can order the president to do something. Because we have what's called separation of powers, and we need to find out if that is permitted. If it's permitted anywhere in the Constitution, does it say that the court can order the executive branch to do something? And if you turn to Article 1, Section 9, it says, the privilege of the writ of habeas corpus shall not be suspended unless when in cases of rebellion or invasion, the public safety may require it. Now, the word writ is an old English word for order. So here, a court can order habeas corpus. That word means you have the body. Bring him to me. Bring him to me. You jailer, you U.S. Marshal, you who are holding him in prison, you executive authority, maybe the president ordered you to go out and arrest this person because he is a traitor or whatever, et cetera, et cetera. Here, this clause clearly says that the court can't order the president to hand him over. And, of course, the purpose of the habeas corpus is for the judge to determine whether the incarceration is constitutional or not. If it's declared, if he says or she says it's unconstitutional, the guy is sprung. If the judge rules, no, you are being incarcerated by the chief executive of the United States of America because you did so-and-so and there's evidence to hold that up, you're going back to jail. Mm-hmm. So the Constitution does allow federal courts to order the president to do something. Now, next question. Are there exceptions? In my opinion, there are. When the president is acting as commander-in-chief, especially when it comes to the borders, and this is where President Trump, he runs the danger. He may, I don't know if he will, but he may at some point, if he gets frustrated enough, say, forget it, I'm going to go ahead and do what I want to do, regardless of what the court says. And that has, there is precedent for that. It happened with Andrew Jackson. It happened with FDR during World War II. It happened with Lincoln. Mm. So the issue is, if he does that, what happens? Mm. That's what I want to discuss.
But if let me ask you this, Dave. You're focusing in mainly on doing that as commander-in-chief, right?
Yes, yes, exactly.
But out of that context, you know, what could a court order a president to do outside of that context?
Outside, if you're a prisoner, if President Obama wanted to put Gary Dull in jail,
I have a good attorney.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
But if he wanted to do that, the court could order Gary Dull to appear before the judge, and the judge will decide whether you will or will not remain. But that's outside the context. That's usually as a prisoner. But habeas corpus can be used in other contexts. But the question I want to answer and share with our audience this morning, what happens if the president does that? Where does it go? The court can hold the president in contempt of office or contempt of court. What happens? The answer is clear. If the President Trump disobeys a court order when he's acting as commander-in-chief, and I believe there are exceptions where that can happen, If that goes forward, then the House of Representatives will decide whether to impeach the president or not. That's how that will be settled. The court can't remove the president, but that can lay the groundwork for a constitutional action of impeachment. That's what would happen if President Trump says, forget it, I'm going to do it regardless of what some fruitcake in Washington State says.
Well, you know, well, the thing that concerns me, I'm sorry, Sam, but I just want to throw this out. Mm-hmm. The thing that concerns me is that there are people already wanting to impeach the president, which I believe is quite ridiculous. And I would say that the people on the left will do anything that they can to try to get this man impeached. It scares me, David.
You can imagine Hillary Clinton sitting over there. Where were you people in November? She must be going out of her mind seeing all these demonstrations. And all these, this I call this the estrogen wars. All this fighting by all these beautiful women in America going absolutely ape. And here they are. Where were they during the election? You decided to act up a little bit late, my dear.
Dave, I think good point. We only have just a couple seconds left here, but on this matter of immigration, it could rise to that occasion because this is an extraordinarily divisive issue. But the court at this point has not done anything. And would I be correct in saying that if a court had such power, it is the Supreme Court?
You mean the U.S. District Judge? Look what the U.S. District Judge did to that executive order. He declared it unconstitutional. Mm. So I don't understand why these low-level judges can do something like that. I don't think they should have that power.
Well, that's interesting. Ladies and gentlemen, these are some things about the matter of law and so forth that's not often talked about, but important to do so. Dave and Gary, when we come back, I would like to go to the issue of the 25th Amendment. There are some folks that are saying that the president should be removed because he is, quote-unquote, mentally ill. And I'm going to share just a little bit of a quote from one individual about that and what the basis for that is.
Working for you. ladies shining forth, we are the Freedom Station, WFYN.
News Radio. I'm Lillian Wu. President Trump telling about 24 chief executives of major U.S. companies. He plans to bring millions of jobs back to the country. Also touching on the visit to Mexico by top aides, the Homeland Security Secretary and Secretary of State Rex Tillerson.
I said, that's going to be a tough trip because we have to be treated fairly by Mexico. That's going to be a tough trip.
Also applauding what he calls progress at the border.
He's over there with General Kelly, who's been unbelievable at the border. You see what's happening at the border. All of a sudden, for the first time, we're getting gang members out. We're getting drug lords out. We're getting really bad dudes out of this country.
Some in Mexico outraged by the president's immigration policy. And the Arkansas Supreme Court striking down an ordinance in Fayetteville banning discrimination based on a person's sexual orientation or gender identity. Fox News, we report, you decide.
These are the times that try men's souls. The summer soldier and the sunshine patriot will, in this crisis, shrink from the service of their country. But he that stands it now deserves the love and thanks of man and woman. Tyranny, like hell, is not easily conquered. Yet we have this consolation with us, that the harder the conflict, the more glorious the triumph. Thomas Paine, The American Crisis, 1776.
I'm Jan Markell, helping you understand the time.
It helps us maintain an Israel-centric prophetic grid. The purpose of the clock is to help us process the prophetic information in a biblical way and to understand it the way God intends for it to be by keeping Israel in the center.
In 1948, God's prophetic calendar began its countdown to fulfilling Bible prophecy. When Israel became a nation, it started in motion God's time clock. The world stage is being set for a world dictator, a one world government system, and World War III that will be fought in the Middle East. God's word tells us that Israel will be the center of all of this, and in the end, God comes to her rescue. For Christians, it is important that we don't lose our support for Israel. God has not abandoned his promises to her. In fact, Israel is the main character in his final chapter of human history. For more information, listen to our weekend program on this station or anytime at olivetreeviews.org.
You're listening to Stand in the Gap Today, the daily radio program of the American Pastors Network. For more information, visit the APN website, AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. And now, let's rejoin Stand in the Gap Today.
David, we're going to stay on the Constitution again. We talked about the 22nd Amendment with the president, and we covered that last segment. But there are those out there right now that's going to bring us to the issue of the 25th Amendment. And that has to do with the fact that there are many, if you take in Google, anybody listening, take in Google, you'll see what I'm saying here is true. Put in president, mental health, or something like that, those words, and you'll get a whole listing of things that have occurred within the last 5 days. The coordinated attack by the very people who are supposed to be the vanguard of truth, and I think in many cases have become actually the fake media and the fake news, along with certain Democratic congressmen who you will find, if you do that Googling, you'll find individuals stepping up. They are raising a narrative that, in my opinion, is extraordinarily bizarre and dangerous because it raises great doubts, and I think wrongly so, about those in positions of leadership. Just today, a couple days ago, there was on CNN, there was a headline that came up. It said, the quote, is the media in a state of emergency over Trump? That was the headline. And in that one interview that I listened to, there was an interview of Andrew Sullivan of the New York Magazine. And I'd like you to listen just a little bit of this interview with him as he's kind of setting up this whole narrative. Russ, if you could play that, please.
That this is a national emergency. You use the word emergency in your column. Why? What's your case?
Because any liberal democracy, any constitutional democracy, relies upon something we call the objective truth. Now, some politicians fib and lie. In fact, almost all of them do to some extent. But they always do it in a way that pays some sort of deference to reality. And what we've discovered is that in the last 3 weeks, this president, rather like he did on the campaign trail, simply insists that black is white, that things that we can see with our own eyes, like the size of his inauguration crowd, are not exactly what we're seeing, and is able to command his underlings to actually go out there and also say things that are empirically untrue. This is not about politics or ideology. Like, there are some things that Trump believes in, for example, a more restrained America around the world, immigration controls, for example, that I'm sympathetic to. It's about the ability for the president to tell the truth and for us to believe it.
Now, Dave and Gary, I hope you heard what he said there. I'm going to repeat what he just said. He finished his commentary by saying it's about the ability for the president to tell the truth and for us to believe it. Now, the balance of this interview went into specifically talking about mental illness and mental instability. But it was based, David, on the premise that this matter of, yes, he says, objective truth, and that we're in a time when we are not hearing objective truth. And I'm not saying that this is the issue here, because I want to ask you about this, but I thought it very telling, because some of these same people, Dave, that are talking about the lack of objective truth are the worst purveyors of deception that I have seen. And there's a big there's a big difference between the president or a person telling the truth, but he also said, and for us to believe it. There are some people who won't believe the truth, even if you tell them. So he raises an issue, and if he says the mental illness that falls down on the side of the president, perhaps mental illness also falls down on the side of those who see the truth and won't believe it. So
that's interesting.
You know what I mean? But David Neal, I'm going to go to you now on this, because the narrative is out there now. They're raising the specter of saying mental illness. He is mentally ill, therefore, by conjecture, incapable of fulfilling his capacity. And, of course, we can agree and disagree here on the matter of truth, because that's really where it hinges. But are we entering a dangerous time in our nation's history, David, when the media and others who, quote-unquote, professionals, actually raise serious doubts in the minds of the public about our president or any other top levels of position with this whole issue of mental illness and ascribing it to something like this? This is getting into some uncharted territory, I think, aren't we?
Well, this is the first time I've ever seen it. By the way, ladies and gentlemen, if you want to see the petition to have the president removed for mental illness, go to www.change.org, diagnose Trump, www.change.org, diagnose Trump. And this is a petition for clinical psychologists. They've got 36,503 signatures so far. They want to get 50,000, so they're 13,000 short. And they claim that President Trump has a narcissistic personality disorder. That is the official claim that they are saying, that he needs to be removed. The name of the member of Congress who has petitioned this is Karen Bass, Democrat of California. And this is what it says about a narcissistic personality disorder. I'm telling you, I've been looking about this. I'm starting to think I need medication myself. Let me read you what this thing says.
Amen.
It says, a pervasive pattern of grandiosity in fantasy or behavior, need for admiration, and lack of empathy, beginning by early adulthood and present in a variety of contexts, as indicated by five or more of the following. And I'm not going to go down and give all nine, but there are nine of them. And they claim, these 36,000 psychiatrists and psychologists, that President Trump matches all nine. Mm. Well, I'm sorry, I don't agree.
Well, David, this is serious. And David, Sam, we can expect anything, I think, from the liberal media and from the liberal politicians. What was it, Representative Waters yesterday referring to Trump and all of his people as scumbags? When have we ever heard anything like that? I mean, it's just, it concerns me greatly. But keeping on target here, in legal analysis, are there any constitutional grounds for levying such a charge against the president? And in addition to that, would our current constitutional provisions even permit such an action from taking root, let alone be the basis of forced removal from the office? I mean, we're talking about the fact that he can only be removed from the office, what, as a result of high crimes and misdemeanors or something like that? What are your thoughts, David?
Well, actually, it is beyond that, high crimes and misdemeanors, because Amendment 25 says that the president can be removed. Here's what it actually says in the 25th. A written declaration has to be submitted to both members of the Senate and the House, declaring that he or she is, well, it doesn't say she, but he is unable to discharge the powers and duties of his office. Now, that is so broad, it can mean just about anything. And what it means here in this situation, if the president became comatose, for example, well, he hasn't committed a crime, he hasn't committed a misdemeanor, he's just, you know, gotten ill. And in this kind of a situation, this is where the 25th Amendment comes into play. If the president comes under an operation and is put unconscious, the 25th Amendment was enacted with George Bush. This can happen. If the president goes bonkers and joins the la-la land with California, then he could be removed from office for being crazy. And that's what this exactly does.
Along with a whole lot of other people out, well, I was going to say out in California, but across the nation. Yeah. Because, you know, there are a lot of people who are not thinking correctly, David, because they're not thinking according to absolute truth. That's why this scares me.
It is frightening. It is very frightening because, you know, people say that conservatives are intolerant. Conservatives cannot handle a loss. Ladies and gentlemen, look at the behavior of the liberal left. Look what they're doing. Look what they're saying. They cannot handle the fact that they lost the election fair and square.
David, and I think it's that is correct. That's what Mitch McConnell, the leader of the Senate, said at his town meeting last night in Kentucky when he was confronted by some of these paid organizers and others at his meeting. He just addressed them. He thanked them for being there. I thought he did a good job. He said he complimented them for being there and taking the time from their busy schedules to come. But then he said, effectively, look, the winners determine the rules. We won this time. Get over it. And for McConnell to say it, I thought that was interesting. But, you know, but in this regard here, and we don't have much time left, but in the aspect of the 25th Amendment, what we're talking about, Dave, the 25th Amendment to provide for a transition when a president is incapacitated for some reason is something that is of necessity and needs to be done. But what we're talking about here is an effort to try to enter into this, twisting what is there. And don't you find it odd that those who are defining the terms of narcissism and that you read from are the individuals that are actually signing this? I mean, these are the guys, the psychologists and so forth. They're the ones who actually wrote the manual and write the definitions, so they can make definitions whatever they want them to be.
Well, this was on MSNBC the other night, and they had the part of the psychiatrists that were on TV, and to me, they looked like they needed to be medicated themselves, frankly. I will say this. What people don't understand about President Trump, remember, he is a New Yorker. He speaks the street, which means he exaggerates a lot of things. He doesn't mean it. He knows he doesn't mean it, and we need to understand that about him.
Ladies and gentlemen, I hope that you get the sense of the discussion here today. On this program, we try to put out what's there objectively and truthfully. This is not a defend Donald Trump under any circumstance. We will go after anyone who gets off mark. But in this case, these kinds of accusations that are being raised in these very improper ways are very dangerous, and so we're bringing those to light here. Now, in the next segment, we're going to go to the White House. A recent article in Politico actually sets it up that Trump's open-door Oval Office policy may make him the most open-door president of anyone. We're going to talk about that.
I'm sitting here right now looking at the beautiful, full-color Founders Bible.
In addition to the trustworthy New American Standard text, it contains original historical artwork, as well as 64 full-color insert pages, 150 biographies or insightful quotes from the founders, and 450 pages of embedded commentary highlighting biblical insights. This beautiful leather-bound volume produced by historian David Barton has a gold embossed APN logo on the front. It can be yours this month as you support APN with a gift of $250 or more. To see it and make your gift, go to AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. That's AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. If you can't send $250 right now, we'd still like to hear from you. In gratitude for a gift of any amount, we'll send you a wonderful audio CD by Sam Rohr entitled God's Plan for a Blessed Nation. It will bless and challenge you. Let us hear from you today. Remember, all gifts to APN are tax deductible. Thank you, and God bless you.
Hello, this is Sam Rohr. Although the term Christian education doesn't occur in the Bible, it does speak of the moral and spiritual instruction of children. It places a high value on knowledge, both of God and His works. It describes the moral and spiritual fruits of this knowledge and defines its ultimate purpose, the growth of your child in godliness of character and action. That's why we suggest you consider BJU Press K-12 materials. Your child's a unique individual created for a specific purpose. Proper instruction that includes the Bible and the relational influence of godly teachers produces a pure heart and a willing mind. The Bible calls that success. BJU Press materials are well written, grade level appropriate, and biblically integrated. They teach critical thinking skills and keep your child engaged and excited about learning. If you're a Christian school teacher or administrator, a homeschool teacher, or a parent who just wants your child to learn more, start by exploring the BJU Press website. Visit BJUPress.com. That's BJUPress.com.
So, thank you for coming to my town hall today and how wonderful Common Core is and how much money we got from the federal government for giving up control of education. Any questions?
So, Representative, we have adopted new National Common Core standards, but they are not higher than our existing standards, and they were never really tested.
Well, yes.
And now we have to retrain all our teachers again and make them teach from a script so they can teach to national tests?
Well, yes.
And buy lots of new computers and equipment and copyrighted lessons from the same people who are promoting Common Core?
Well, yes.
And we're going to share all our private, family, medical, disciplinary, and test results with people nationwide. Why are you supporting it?
Call your representatives now and ask them to stop Common Core and restore local control. This message brought to you by Pennsylvanians Restoring Education. Go to parestoringeducation.org or call 484-678-2236.
From the Pennsylvania Family Institute, I'm Michael Gear with today's Family Update. I'm in the midst of reading a new book called Gosnell, the story of America's most prolific serial killer. As you've probably guessed, it's about Dr. Kermit Gosnell, the West Philadelphia abortionist who's now serving a life sentence for the gruesome atrocities he committed against women and babies at his Philadelphia clinic. I know the story well, and we helped successfully pass legislation to try and prevent another such house of horrors from ever arising again. That's why I'm so disgusted with our current governor, Tom Wolf, who this past week stood just 2 miles from the site of Gosnell's former clinic and held a press conference where he denounced Senate Bill 3. That bill would stop all brutal dismemberment abortions and end all abortions after 20 weeks. The Gosnell book demonstrates how Governor Tom Ridge helped enable Gosnell, and under Tom Wolf's mindset, we would open the door to even more Gosnells. That's just terrible.
You're listening to Stand in the Gap Today, the daily radio program of the American Pastors Network. For more information, visit the APN website, AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. And now, let's rejoin Stand in the Gap Today.
Well, is it possible that what we're witnessing is something really historic on a really good part of the equation, and that is that the Trump administration might just be the most open door in the history of our country? Politico this morning ran an article entitled this, Trump's Open Door Oval Office. It goes on to state that the president may be the most open door president in history and strikingly different than Barack Obama or George W. Bush. A quote from the article says this, quote, a White House official declined to comment on the record but said the president likes to be accessible, including with his staff, and he'll continue that. The article went on to say Trump famously has said that his team has no formal chain of command. But his loose approach means that no single person in the White House will control the flow of information into the Oval Office. Many individuals can walk into the president's office unannounced, including Omarosa, Manigault, strategist Steve Bannon, senior policy advisor Stephen Miller, chief of staff Reince Priebus, and a host of others. And Gary, I want to go to you first. I'm leaving out a whole list of other people. But Gary, you've run organizations, as I have, and you also know the Word of God. And when I cite and describe this type of management that Politico is indicating, does it increase or decrease your confidence level in this president in particular from the standpoint of process and style that he is using?
Well, it's interesting, Sam, and I'm not a mathematician, but I came up with a formula that says Trump plus open door equals transparency. Now, I don't know that we can take that to the nth degree in my mathematical abilities here today, but, you know, along with what David News said in the last segment, the fact that he's a man off the streets of Queens, as it were, I think that probably this is reflected, maybe, in this open-door policy that he has. And, you know, I think that any leader of any organization must always have an open-door policy to his people if indeed he's going to be able to communicate to them and they're going to be able to communicate to him. I think that one of the problems with the presidency, the office of the presidency, Sam, is that many times the president is restricted from getting the right information based upon who keeps others from seeing the president, if you understand what I'm saying. Hmm. And so with this type of open door policy, he is able to receive all the information and then make the decision based upon all of that information that various folks have brought to him. I think it's an interesting thing to see. And I think it's biblically correct.
Well, I mean, one of the first things is that there's safety in a multitude of counselors, right, Gary?
And
one thing I thought of is that if you don't listen to your counselors, and Barack Obama did the exact opposite. The article went on to say that Barack Obama actually hardly let anybody in. And he went to those that he wanted to speak to when he wanted to speak to them, which almost, to me, from a management perspective, almost looks and says, well, you know, if you want to get somebody to agree with you, go and find somebody who agrees with you. Rather than an open door is you walk in. If you have something that I think I need to know, come in. And as one of them said, he wants to have access to many people, not just one funnel through where one person controls the information flow.
You and I, we've heard it said before, and you and I experienced it somewhat when we were in New York meeting with him last year, and that is that Donald Trump listens to people. He listens, and then he makes decisions based upon what he's heard. I think this contributes to this factor.
Dave, let me go to you. From an historical perspective, as you look back on presidential styles in the past, and I know I'm catching you off guard, so you may not have it directly at hand, but how does this kind of management style and an open-door type policy that he's obviously implementing, which is so strikingly different than Barack Obama's, is there any president that you can look back on and comment that would be similar to this at all?
For modern presidents, it's unprecedented. But in the past, there have been presidents at the very beginning of the country where people virtually could come up to the White House and go in and ask to see the president. So it has happened before. But for modern presidents, because of the security concerns, this is unprecedented. This president breaks a lot of molds, and I think he is going to be a great president.
Well, let me ask you the same question I asked Gary then. Does it give you more confidence or less confidence that this kind of policy is in place? You theoretically, if you had the wrong people, you could run the risk that people are wasting your time. But even some of the comments by some of these staff members in the article indicated that they said that the president values his time highly. He does not like to waste time, but he has time, for input from those that are a part of the team. I mean, I like the sound of that. What are your thoughts is just about the practical aspect of this?
I think it's absolutely wonderful. I wish this president would be getting the credit for the great things he's already done before he even took office. Before he took office, he saved over 1,000 jobs in that air conditioning outfit. And, you know, people say, well, that's nothing. Well, to 1,000 families, that's everything.
Amen. That's right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's interesting, David, you mentioned presidents in the past. I think it was Abraham Lincoln, you know, even before he was inaugurated, there were death threats on him. And when he became president, it was suggested that they close the White House. But he basically made the statement that it's important for the people to have access to the presidency. That's interesting, isn't it?
Absolutely, yes. It was the Pinkertons that helped him. It was his first trip to Washington. Well, not his first in his life, but I mean as president-elect, where he was under great danger. And it was the Pinkertons that helped him get there safely.
Well, I tell you, it's interesting to watch the individual, you know, the distinctive personalities. Each president's different. I mean, Barack Obama had his own personality, and so does this one. And I'm glad, frankly, that they're not all the same. This one, obviously, this president's still writing his history. But this kind of thing, when it comes up, this is a good insight, I believe. I'm glad that Politico read this, or you know, wrote this article here today. So we'll just keep an eye on it, David. We've been trying to close our programs, as you know, with prayer. We've covered a number of different issues here today, a number of things to pray about. Our listeners, I get comment from listeners who enjoy it when you close the program in prayer. And I would like to ask you to do that right now. Just take these matters before the Lord, praying for our president, praying for those who are attempting to upend all these things. Put this before the Lord and just make it a matter of prayer for
us. My pleasure. The wise men said in Proverbs 17:14, the beginning of strife is as when water first trickles. Therefore, stop contention before it becomes worse and quarreling breaks out. Dear Father, in Jesus' name, we pray for a spirit of unity in America. We understand, dear Father, that not everybody agrees on the policies of our leaders in Washington. But we do agree, dear Father, as Americans, that we should become united and stand together. Bless America. Bless all people in this country. Let us move forward. Our America's future and best days are yet to be. In Christ's name, we give thee praise and thanks.
Thank you, David New, for being with us today. David New, constitutional attorney, one of our most favorite guests on the program, Gary Dahl and I. And with that, we thank you for being with us today on Stand in the Gap today. I encourage you to go to our website at standinthegapradio.com. Drop us a note. Tell us what you think about the program. Pose questions. We'll deal with them on this issue, on the program, as that we're able to do so. And until we come back to you 23 hours from now, would you stand in the gap for truth where you are?
We hope you've enjoyed listening to Stand in the Gap today with Sam Rohr, Gary Dahl, and David Kistler. Brought to you by the American Pastors Network. Every day on this station, we address the most urgent issues undermining the culture from a biblical and constitutional perspective. APN takes seriously the command to be salt and light in this culture. Our mission is to declare truth into the public square, bringing a biblical worldview to the issues of the day. We seek to build a dynamic network of pastors across the nation who hold firmly to the authority of Scripture and boldly preach the whole counsel of God. This ministry is supported through the prayers and financial support of people like you, and we urge you to do all you can to help the American Pastors Network accomplish this mission. To learn more, visit www.americanpastorsnetwork.net and help us with your donation today. Find out how we're impacting the culture and how you can join in the mission. Join us again tomorrow for Stand in the Gap today.
If my people who are called by my name will humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, then I will hear from heaven and I will forgive their sin and heal their land. 2 Chronicles 7:14. WFYL reminds you to pray for America.
Broadcasting live from historic West Norriton Township, this is AM 1180, AM 1180, WFYL.